Okay, so we'll see how we can do this without source sheets, but we'll hopefully be fine. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so we talked about the last two shiurim, the ways in which the nature of authority has changed in the as geography has disappeared as a or not disappeared but minimized as a relevant category of halachic authority. But to be honest, the thing that I think has changed the role of an educated laity in Psak more than anything else, and I've mentioned this before, but I think it's time to actually analyze it, is the access to information. Right? One of the reasons that traditionally non-experts didn't have halachic authority was simply because they didn't have access to basic texts. Right? Either they didn't, as it was, books were hard to come by. And if you didn't know Shas Baal Peh and you couldn't search it, right, and you didn't even have access to all the volumes, so you didn't know what the halacha was. I mean, Poskim didn't always know. There's this funny in the Mari Bruna, when you learn the Lashon Hara sugyas in the Mari Bruna, it's clear that he has no idea what the Gemara says, because he bases all his knowledge of the sugyas based on some parenthetical comments in the Gemara in Bava Basra and Lashon Hara, and nothing in Erechin, probably because he just didn't have Erechin, right? Like, he clearly didn't have it. Like, if he had, why would he be, right, guessing? But he just didn't have it. Like, and I don't know if he even realized how much there, because I guess, you know, if you didn't, Mari Bruna. It's just an example. What? I don't know if he realized, like, how many people would think of the fact, if you didn't know that the Lashon Hara sugyas are hidden in the middle of Erechin, who would think that they're missing the main sugyas? Like, you know, I don't know. But nowadays, people have so much access to information that part of the reason that at least educated laity, even non-educated laity think this is true, but definitely educated laity who have been trained in yeshiva.
Educated laity?
Laity. Like educated balabatim.
Uh-huh.
People who have gone to yeshiva. Right, let's put it this way, right? Yeshiva educated balabatim. People who are capable, at least, of opening Gemara, opening a Shulchan Aruch, definitely with coherence approaching an English summary book and looking in the footnotes and saying, oh, this position is Ramosha Feinstein and this one is someone I've never heard of. Probably the one by Ramosha Feinstein is more authoritative. Right? You know, different levels of skill. But that, you know, and then add to that Bar Ilan and Otzar HaChachma and Hebrew books and Google and Ask the Rabbis and Facebook groups and Svaria and, yeah, and Facebook groups and WhatsApps and all the things they have, right?
And Rabbi Ziering's Facebook.
Well, I don't usually do Psak there. I don't usually do Psak there, yeah, you know.
Anyone have pages 3 to 10 of
such and such? Yeah, that is the best use of Facebook in the world. But that, I think, has really changed things because that really forces us to ask the question, well, now that we have this access, so how does that change things? And I forget who it was who said it that I heard recently, who pointed out that it's not just access to information anymore. It's not just that you have access to Svarim. It's that if you Google a Shaila, you will actually come across analysis. Right? It's not just you'll get sources. Like, you might get an Ask the Rabbi from, let's say, the Eretz Chemda website, and there's sophisticated analysis there. It's not just like it's random, and someone who has yeshiva education can look and say, this argumentation makes sense to me. Right, it's not just random. So how does that change the dynamic in Psak? So the way this is often quoted in yeshivas is that the first person to really, really, really ask this question was the Lechem Mishnah. And it's not true. The first person to ask this question seems to have been the Ri. The Ri Balatosvot. Yes, the Ri. Ri Balatosvot, the Ri Azokain. In a sefer that nobody ever reads, which is the Smak Mitzurich. Smak Mitzurich is a 14th century, late Balatosot or something, commentary on the Smak of Rav Yitzchak of Korbei. And writing in there, now, there is a bit of a girsa problem there. It's not 100% clear that it's the Ri. In some versions, it's the Ram. And if it's the Ram, it's probably Rav Moshe Vevro, which is also Bala Tosfot, also relatively important Bala Tosfot. So maybe it's not the Ri, maybe it's Rav Moshe Vevro. Yacholiot, we don't know. We have different girsa out of this. But in the version we have anyways, it is the Ri. And the Ri writes as follows, that nowadays... the halacha of more halacha b'fnei rabo doesn't apply because our rebbeim are not really our rebbeim. Our rebbeim are svarim. Kach katuv, right? So that's what he writes, right? If you want, if you can get me, you know, get me a Rama Michal Talmud Torah, not this one, but like the one that would have a lecha mishnah, right? Like a
Frankel. Oh, like, Rabbi Hirschberg might use
it. Yeah. But I mean, I can pull it up if I need to, but without. Right, let me see. I mean, I can pull it up. What? It's said, fine. Whatever. I have it. Actually, I have it here.
Said I can eat kidney.
Who said you're gonna eat kidney?
Shui.
Okay. Oh no, you know I have it. I have it. It's okay.
Okay.
He writes. That's fine. So Lecha Mishnah writes as follows. The Sfira Leila Rabbeinu, the Haina Dafka Bisman Kadmon, Shelo Hayulomdim Ella Mipi Sofrim, Velomipi Svarim. Ukmoshe Nir Mashalaman Adavar Moshe Shalaman Pig Vural Peh. Because that was the original model. Aval Ata Shahatora Bichtav. But now that everything is written, Vainulomdim Mipi Svarim, and we learn realistically from
and
books.
Not from Sofrim.
Midyuk. Vadai Dilo Biinen Kule Hai Loze. We don't need this as much, etc. And then he says, "Ukeinze shamati b'shem echad shekata b'shem chacham echad." And I heard from somebody who heard from somebody. Maybe this is what he's quoting. Is this smak mitzurech? Whatever. I don't know. Shebizman hazeh leka more halacha b'fnei rabo v'bneish anu lomnim b'pisvarim v'hasvarim heim hamilamdim.
The svarim are the teachers.
And this is the claim. Now, there are, you know, I think I've mentioned this as well, that there are poskim who have other insights based on this. The Shlomo Kluger quotes in his Peirush on the Eish Lavram in Kuf Amud Vav and Aruch Chaim that it also changes the balance between Oker Harim and Sinai, right? That Sinai becomes less important. Meaning, right, the Gemara had said that if I have to choose Oker Harim or Sinai, right, the person who's Harif, the person who's a Lamdan, or the person who knows a lot, so the Gemara says, who do you prefer as Rashiva?
Sinai.
Right, because I call it Tzarech Lamar, the Chataya. Because everyone needs the person who has the wheat. But the Shlomo Kluger says that that's not true Bizman HaZeh. Right, the Bizman HaZeh, when you have access to information, so the information is cheap, analysis is what's hard. And therefore you give preference to the...
would the Lecha Mishnah say, Leika Aselecha Rav Hayom?
What? No, you give preference to the Oker Harim.
Let's explain what. Yeah, would they say Leika Aseh Lecha Rav Hayom?
So hold that thought for a minute, okay? Now, not everyone agrees with this, right? The Maharik, Maharik Kalon, Shavukov Samachtet, right? He quotes the Kosev Marsh, Kosev Betzamach Tzurich, B'Shem Maharam. Right? He's the one who quotes as Maharam. Again, if that's true, then it's from Moshe Vevro. Because of Stam Shemoro Rab b'fnei Rabo chayev mita. He says, I don't think this is true, because the Shulchan Aruch is still quoting the halacha more halacha b'fnei Rabo, which means that he didn't accept this complete paradigm change. Will Omru Shain Dinze Noeg Akshav Shmami no the Shirley Vyam Akshav Hu Noeg. Shre Lo Bola Gid Lano Adinim Ashainam Noagim Bizmanaze. Ula Stirminu Eda Noagim. Because Shulchan Aruch is telling us practical halacha. So he's not trying to, you know, confuse us. right? And same or halacha from Arav doesn't apply. So he argues that it does apply. But he is willing to say, but hecha shal ram mevu'eret beposkim, hecha shein mevu'eret, hecha nu chalom hashkol dvarim ketuvim. He says, but maybe they are right in a case when something is explicit in poskim. Right? Meaning he's willing to accept this halfway, that if something is explicit, then it's fine, because then, right, it's not true of everything in life, but maybe things that it is, things that are explicit, you know, that halacha might be true. Right. So that I think it was Elie Fisher who made this point, but I'm not sure. I don't remember where I heard it from, but he was the most recent share I heard who was presenting on this. And he, whoever it was, argued that, and I think there's truth to this, that even if you don't accept the argument that simply there's access to information, right? It's even worse nowadays, or better, or whatever you want to think, which is that, right, it's really just not the case. That part of the reason that rabbinic power has been weakened in that sense, and it's been democratized, is because of analysis, right? Because I think, realistically, and I really do think this is true at some level. It's one thing when people said, look, I can look up any Makaros. Because when you look up any Makaros, so maybe you're going to find some Tshuva Nidcheis of somebody who, like, if you don't know what you're doing, you're going to find some Posek, you don't know who he is, you don't really understand the Tshuva. But let's be honest, right? If you find a reputable online source, again, you look at the Eretz Chemda website.
Or the Haaretz Yon.
I mean, those aren't usually like Tshuvot in those sense. But if you look at
very nice,
but yes, if you go to the VBM and you look at Rybrovsky's halachic pieces, you know, I am willing to put my name behind the fact that 99% of what he writes, right, like no one is 100%, but 99% is accurate, is a good summary, is reasonable psak, maybe you could argue, but is reasonable psak, and the analysis is there, right? It's not just random sources, right? Or if you open up Gray Matter by Rai Jachter. Again, this is top-notch summary.
Is Rabbi Nair one that does things like this?
Rabbi Nair does, like, short little chubot.
He's a Rav at where?
He's a Rav Beit El. About in there?
Is he like a big?
He's a very important posek in the. And again, but in the Chardal world more. Chardal. But yeah. Now, by the way, this is, and again, I can add things to it. It's Encyclopedia Talmudit, RJJ, the RJJ Journal, Tchumen. Right, there's access to all the secondary information, which is an analysis. This isn't just. And I think that really does change the balance of power in ways that we need to be sensitive to. Now, I think I've mentioned this point at some point. Another factor here, another implication of this, might be what the Aruch HaShulchan writes. Right, we talked about the possibility that you might have more than Rebbe Movak. But the Aruch HaShulchan says something that I think is very compelling, which is that he thinks nowadays it makes no sense to have multiple Rebbeim, because at some point, right, the Shulchan Aruch talks about the possibility that I could have my Rebbe for Mishnah, my Rebbe for Halacha, my Rebbe for Gemara. He takes a similar argument, essentially, which is that, look, our basic Rebbeim in terms of information are books. So Dafka, he says, nowadays, you only have one Rebbe Muvak. And who's your Rebbe Muvak? I think I've mentioned this before, no?
Yes.
The person who teaches you what to do with that material. Because information is cheap. Right, he says, he said, when it was about information, everything was by heart, so one person memorized Tanakh, and one person memorized Mishnah, and one memorized Brisa, and one memorized, you know, the Gemara analysis, and you learned from each of them, you got whatever, you know, and if you had a photographic memory, then you eventually got it from everybody. Fine. Right, one was sharper, one was this. So you had different rebbeim. All in the crowd of levad, mishnah levad, gemara levad. But now, most of our learning is done by ourselves, in books. V'chol ha-Talmud katuv lefaneinu, v'chein chol ha-chidushim, v'chol ha-poskim ktuvim lefaneinu, the Gemara, the Rishonim, the Achronim, everything is in front of us. Lo shayach lechalik b'ka'ela kamuvan, v'chul ben v'talmud muvak, lo shayach ha-talmud ken lomad b'shivot ha-rabim rabot b'shanim, v'ki'bel mimenu darka shel Torah, hein b'pkiyut, hein b'svarot yisharot. And therefore, the only way he thinks you have a Rebbe, b'zman hazeh, is if you learned in yeshiva for a long time and learned everything from somebody. A way of learning b'kiyus, a way of learning iyun, a way of thinking. Therefore, the only thing you can have is one Rebbe. But who are Rishon Shemidu al Karen HaTorah? And this is the person who, right?
But even so, can you learn those different skills?
Yeah, look, you could argue, and you can say that's not true. But fundamentally, I think his insight is right, is that this democratization of information has radically shifted the way we think about Psak. Right, whether you agree with the Lecha Mishnah, Smach Mitzurech, right, Ad HaSof, which is that it has made it that we're allowed to paskin even our Rebbeim around because they're not really our Rebbeim, or you say, look, maybe there is such an idea of Rebbe, but the only person who's your Rebbe is the person who taught you how to think, really taught you how to think.
I'm assuming that is a Da'at Yachmi.
I don't know.
Lecha Mishnah.
I don't know. It's Lecha Mishnah. It's the I don't know. Right? Marik claims it is a Das Yachid, at least in its extreme form. I don't know. I think that the dynamic is definitely somewhat true. No?
Is there a... what's the onesh for...
What?
What's the onesh for...
I don't know. You know, that doesn't have an onish like that.
What is it?
You know, it could be daraisa, function of kavod harav, right? And things like that, but presumably what it is. Now, there's another flip to this, which I think is very important, which is that there's another way in which this democratizes information, and that is, on the one hand, it gives the average person more access and possibly more ability to paskin. What it also does is it takes certain authority away from the rabbinate. And the way the Pitkei Tshuva puts it from the Shvut Yaakov is that nowadays a Rav can't just paskin without looking it back up in books. Right? Because he flips it and he says there is an Isser of Mora Halacha Bifnei Rabbo if you paskin without looking it up in books, because the information is so easy to access, you can't just assume you know it. Right? Gam the Posek. Right, and he says, "Shekatav de'lochein ra'ui l'kol mishegil ra'ash lo yoresh shum ra'ah bilti iyun b'tchilah ba'sefer." Never paskin without looking in books. Now, that also bridges the gap, right? If you might not have a mora halacha b'fnei rabbo, if it's because of books, or even the mitigated version of the maharik, which is anything that is mefurish ben poskim, you're allowed to paskin, right? Even if you're a b'aim around. Correct, but meaning you're allowed to issue, right? And the flip, which is that the poskim now can't just rely on their knowledge because they have easy access to information, therefore they must take advantage of it. Right? Etc. And this... Now look, we've already talked about possibilities when you can argue against your Rebbe because you have alumdus, you have whatever. But like I said, I think part of it is that that everything has changed because of this dynamic. And this is something that I think we really have to think about. And this is something I think people have been thinking about more. Now, what is the response to this? Right? Or let's think about it, right? Let's step out of this is the role from Balabatim, but what have Poskim done to respond to this? Meaning, what has it actually done to the dynamic? I mean, here there really was an excellent share given by Rabbi Eli Fisher, I think last year. I talked about it with him a little bit. Where he describes, and tell me if this is true to your experience, he said, okay, but how do people then maintain authority? Like, how do people maintain authority in this type of world? Right? Meaning, if it's true, and either it's true halachically, but even if it's not true halachically, it's definitely true descriptively. Right? That people feel less bound, and according to the Smach Mitzurich and the Lecha Mishnah, this is a legitimate contention that halachic authority is now less held by the poskim. So what is the response? Right? Or is there a response?
Wait, why does there have to be a response?
Right? Well, okay, so what is the... Well, what is the response? Meaning, the answer could be in Achami. Right? So what's the response? So he outlined different models. And I'll give you his summary. If you want to listen to the whole shir, you can listen. But he said, there really are different approaches the poskim can take. And tell me if this resonates with you. Okay? So he takes four modern poskim. And he says, this is how different poskim have made themselves relevant in a world where relevance is not a given because people have access to information. So you said one model is the Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon model. What's the Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon model? So someone want to get me, you know the Tefillin book in the back? You know the Tefillin book? It's in the back. I think it's up here, or maybe it was upstairs. You know what I'm talking about?
No, but it's upstairs.
Maybe it's upstairs.
Okay, let me get it upstairs. 1 second. Okay, I don't know where the book went, but right, you said one model is the Rev Rimon model. So who's Rev Rimon? What? Okay, so Rev Rimon is he's the rabbi of Alon Shvut Darom. Yeah,
is it
he
the Rome to Alon Shvut.
Meaning, there's two shuls. He's the rabbi of the Darom shul, the southern one of it. It's the other shul, the new shul. His big thing has been in the last few years, or really his whole life, is extremely good organization. Right? He is the master of charts. He is like the master of charts, of taking tremendous amount of super complicated super complicated material and making a making a chart that basically what?
The 1 versus 2 days.
What?
Is that him? The 1 to 2 day.
I don't know, but it, like, charts with graphics and, like, have you ever seen his books? His books are amazing. It's like these huge flow charts.
What's his name?
Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon. Oh yeah, where you have it? Where is it?
I look up Zev Granik on Facebook.
Yeah, it's like double died because it's my number, but it's also my marital. Which is not good spell. Not getting any.
Okay. So
Zev Granik Lewis poetry.
Good. So like here, if you want to get an idea of what he does, right? So he'll take like when he writes his books, right? So everything will get, you know, your charts, your... You'll get pictures, you'll get the excellent flow charts, everything is bolded, so the sheetot are extremely clear. At the end, you'll get these flow charts, and then a summary, and then a little bit of biography. Right? In this... It's like, you know, little biographies along the way, these types of charts, I mean, everything. Like, he takes the most complicated things.
Venn diagrams?
To look through it. And he says that basically, right, one way that someone keeps authority, right, or keeps relevance, shall we say, in that world is basically to recognize that, look, everyone has access to information, everyone can analyze. The role of the posek is to lay it out in a responsible, clear way so that you can access it, because one of the problems is that when you have so much information, you don't necessarily know what to do with it. So one way to remain relevant is to
have a posek.
Well, no. For a posek is to help people organize, and then right the dynamic of Rebbe to pose right to Talmud is less necessarily he's postening for you, as opposed to helping you deal with the information in a responsible way. And you'll see that his psak, the reason people like Rav Rimon's psak and end up following him, is not necessarily because like they're his Rebbe, but because they also have access to information. Dafka, they went to yeshiva for a few years. But there's so much information that the person who ends up getting they end up giving their authority to, right, or listening to, is the person who can help them make sense, simply, right, structurally, of all the information. That's one way. The second model he outlines is the Pnine Halacha, is Rav Malamud. He's picking these people because these people are super popular in Israel, who keep writing Svarim that people keep following. So Pnine Halacha is also written on everything, right?
Why
with Malamud.
Good.
So why is this such a popular book? Besides the fact that it's excellent, it's clear, it has great footnotes and everything, and that he's written on everything. So Pnine Halacha. So first of all, it's excellent. So first, I mean, my kids have a seder in it at 6 in the morning.
What?
Yes.
Before Hanetz.
Yes. So. Stop! My kids are 6 and 4. Get over it. So what does he do? So first of all, part of it is that he's clear. Part of it is that he bothers to translate his books into like 5 different languages. Part of it is that he has some donor who clearly really likes him, and once a year they do a sale that any shul or any yeshiva who wants it for 250 shekel, he'll give you them the entire set and a set in whatever translated language you want for free. So like you can get like 50 books for 250 shekel, and every year they sponsor it, so every shul in Israel has a copy of it, right? That's part of the cheshbon. But part of the reason that people like him, yes, we do, right over there on the bottom shelf, we have a set, and they have a second set in the shul, and we're getting another set because Ginsburg was filling out for the new sale this year. So Dafka, yes, we do. That's how why I could pull this off the back shelf. So what he does is, in addition to explaining the halacha, he has this nice way of being mishalev, just a little bit of machshava into the halacha to help you frame philosophically what it is you're doing. So when you read the book, it helps make it relevant to people who aren't necessarily interested only in the bottom right line, but they want a framework in which to not lumdishly conceptualize, but hashkafically conceptualize halacha. And that's what he provides in addition to clarity and organization.
Hashkafically conceptualize halacha.
Like the reason for the mitzvah.
Yeah, like he'll put, like in the middle of the halacha, right, he'll explain to you why halacha is developed in a certain way and explain the goal of the halacha and make it relevant. Right, again, it may speak to you, it may not, but he's Elie Fisher is doing this descriptively. Why is it that he's become so popular? And he said, well, again, when information is so easy to access and analysis is so easy to access, what makes you stand out? Right, so it could be, for some people, it's just excellent analysis. Right, but Rav Rimon is because, right, you all looked at it for 3 seconds and said, hey, if I was learning Hillel Shabbos, this is the book I'd want to look at. Not to mention that he also published this in English, right? That there's this in Hebrew and this in English. Yeah, that's also it. He also published it. Like, look at this chart.
Oh, my God.
Like, look at this chart. Look at this.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Right? I'm saying, like, the godless here is, like...
Let me see if I want to start making this guy my posse. He's just out of hand. I want to see this organization.
What?
I want to get
this. Now, a third model, he says, is... A third model, he argues, is what he calls the Rav Asher Weiss model. The Rav Asher Weiss model is basically, right, if you ask me, what is it that makes Rav Asher Weiss such a relevant posek, and it, despite everything?
The Rambam says.
What do you think?
That's how he talks.
So what he argues is that he's just So part of it's creative. Part of it is also just seichel hayashar. He's very, in the end of the day, he's very much like the Achronim said a lot, and there's a lot of information. But if you ever go to a shir, right, he'll like quote all the Achronim, and then he'll like cut through it and say, but you know, this just doesn't make sense to me, right? This is what the halacha seems to be saying. Here's my chiddush. Not just that he's creative, it's that people often feel overwhelmed and like sometimes aren't convinced by all the pilpulim that have developed in the Achronim. And what does he do? He's able to cut through it, and people listen and say, you know what, that makes sense, right? Common sense.
Like what?
What?
Like electricity.
The first time I heard him. I'll give you the example. The first time I heard him in person, right? I went to his shir in Ramot. He was giving a shir on Shemitah. He's giving a shir on Shemitah. And he was quoting the position of I think, Reb Vosner, who says that you're not allowed to plant on the second floor of your house in an atzitz, I think it was nakuv, during Shemitah, because we paskin that cheres can be yonek, right? That you can, that it can draw nutrients through cheres, and therefore
yonek mishadei imo.
And therefore it is usher to plant even the second floor of your house during Shemitah, because it's yonek min haaretz through the tiles. Derech habalata. Okay. And I remember Rav Asher Weiss just stopping, and he said, really? Has anyone ever entertained the possibility that if you have a plant on the second floor of your house, you are not allowed to walk under it on Shabbos because you're violating kotzer? He's like, it's just not true. It just isn't true, right? Like, it's great lamdus, but it's just not true. Like, it's like, right?
You're not cutting a plant when you walk under a plant on the second floor, of course.
Wait, is the din that it's like, it's yonic because the cheres is, like, connected to the arts? Or it's just plain cheres is...
No, it's that because but tiles are cheres, they argue it could be yonic through the floor all the way down to the ground, right?
It goes around you, you're not being coached.
Oh, for God's sake. Right, see, this doesn't help for Lamdanim, right? But help for the average person. Now, but here's where it gets interesting. There is one more possible response. Guys, there is one more possible response, and this is where it gets interesting halachically. The fourth response is Rav Schechter. Rav Schechter's response is, I don't care. This hasn't changed anything. Because the only person who can paskin is somebody who is a Talmud Chacham, not who has access to information here and there. I'll read you his tshuva. This is his tshuva from Women in Tefillin. He writes, all these people are saying, everyone get baskin, everyone's access to information. What do you need a Rebbe for? Isn't it true that every person who learned yeshiva can paskin? Especially now that everything can find the internet, uva otsar achachma uva project hashut shel bar ilan, right? V'chadome v'chol echad yachal lasot etz asmo kitalmid chacham u'kamora hara u'posek av v'shelot chamurot. So everyone can be a posek and everyone can paskin the most chamur shaylas ki ila yodea matzmo et kol amekirot v'et kol shidot b'tziwa kol anal, as if you actually know it. Right, he says, no, it's Narishkeit. You need to be a posek. And then in his somewhat cynical footnote, he says, right, the Gemara in the Yerushalmi says that on Shabbos, if a Amaritz tells you that he was Mafresh Truman and Meisrit, you're allowed to believe him. Why? So the Gemara says, because Amaritz won't lie on Shabbos. They'll lie during the week, but they'll lie on Shabbos because Eimat Shabbat Alav. Okay, because the fear of Shabbos is on them, and he says that's what the Yerushalmi meant. Sha'amar is eimat Shabbat alav. Shebi Shabbat sheinu yachol shamed b'machshev shelo mefachedu. Right, the way you know real poskim from fake poskim is who's afraid of Shabbos. Real poskim aren't afraid of Shabbos. Fake poskim are afraid of Shabbos because then when someone asks them a shaila, they don't have their computer and they are incompetent. Right, shezu v'yeruv yavinu shemen eni yodea. Right, they'll know that they're real amaratzim. Right, that's Rav Schechter's approach to life. Right. So the
paskin on Shabbos,
that's basically right.
Well, once he can do some knowledge, he'll drop.
Right, let's say you Poskin that the electricity is
better.
What?
Let's say
what
you Poskin that electricity.
Okay. And this is really the tension, right? Is that he notes that there is this way of thinking that, you know, which develops from, I mean, he doesn't quote this, but from the Lecha Mishnah Dimeh, who really says, yeah, halacha has been democratized to a large extent in the modern world. And then there are postgame remain relevant by recognizing that, right? But providing the information which people who are educated will want to listen to them, not because they're forced, but because they'll pick up their svarim and it'll really help them organize it, or it'll help them clarify, or their svarim just make sense, right? But then there are people like Rav Schechter who say, no, this, it's true that you can access information, but that's not enough. To be a posek is to be someone who has kol tarah kula, right, at your fingertips, so, and if you talk to him, because then you're Bala Masora, and you have intuition in Psak, and all those things, and it's to deny that anything has changed, right, to deny all this analysis, and to say it's just not true, to be a posek isn't just have access to information. It was definitely Eli Fisher's share, where he pointed out that this isn't complete, and I agree with him, because maybe that's true when you just have access to information. I'm not sure that's completely true when you have access to analysis by people who themselves are Bari Hachi to Paskin. Right, because then you're not necessarily claiming that I can possibly. You're saying I can weigh between analysis by Bari Hachi, which is maybe still a form of psak, but it's not nearly the same. But there was an interesting debate that broke out over this a few years ago, which was in response to this piece by Rav Schechter. So Rav Schechter was responding to the people who allowed. The rabbis in the, well, it was SAR, who allowed girls to wear tefillin in the school, and he was, now his position was defended by he was attacking the position of Rabbi Yisachar Katz, who was a who's I think the head of the halacha department maybe at YCT at Chovevei. And he responded that, well, yeah, exactly. I mean, he responded,
Rabbi Avi Weiss.
I mean, not anymore, but yes, that one. And he argued that this was not correct because, if you look, and I think we saw this when we did Mar Alach B'fnei Rabbo, that the Bitchei Tshuva quotes the Machloket, that maybe this Man Hazeh, now that we have Shulchan Aruch and Nose Kalim, you can Paskin, right? Even, you don't have the Isser of Paskin Min HaMishnah as long as you have Shulchan Aruch and Nose Kalim, because you have the basic halacha, you have the basic analysis, and even someone doesn't know Kol HaTorah Kula.
Paskin Min HaMishnah would be Paskining Min HaMishnah, right?
Well, Min HaMishnah, of course, is not necessarily just Min HaMishnah, it's...
No, no one has it from Mishnah.
Right, it's...
That's the Isser, though.
No, not necessarily. It could just be from... But Mishnah was straight halakha with that explanation, because then you might get it wrong, because you might misapply it. So the Pilchei Tshuva says, but nowadays, if you pass from Shulchan Aruch, it's not that problem, because you have no Sekalim to explain the Lamdos, the basic Lamdos, so you'll get it right.
If Paskin like Shulchan Aruch, it's Paskin Min HaMishnah.
No, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Without Nosei Kalim. So, but in this piece, he also sort of caricatured Rav Schechter, which is to say, oh, Rav Schechter thinks that you can't ever Paskin, right? No one's allowed to Paskin except Gdolim. For every little shal, you have to go to the Gadol. Ray Clapper wrote a response to Ray Katz. Right? And he said, right, he said, I don't think that's true. He went through a whole analysis, and I, you know, we can go through it, but that really we need to do inside. But he basically argued that is that there's a sliding scale that Rav Schechter would agree with. Right, which is that Rav Schechter isn't actually saying that nobody, no educated balabas can paskin any shayla. Right, that obviously, the fact of access to information, you learn yeshivot, you're able to analyze, you know, clearly that qualifies you to an extent, and again, we'll have to prove that in the sources, but fundamentally, that's obviously true. What's Rav Schechter's fundamental point? Then that not every shaila, right? There are shailas that are. There are shailas you can do that, and but there are shailas which are so chamur in terms of the halak, in terms of their complexity, in terms of their communal implications, that. Yeah, that access information isn't enough. You know, look, that's a little bit hard, right? Ray Willig once said that he told his shul when he became rabbi that he's very open-minded. He's happy that he'll only paskin shailas, and anything that's political, they, you know, he'll leave to the board of the shul, the gabayim, whatever. The only thing he retains for himself is the right to determine what's halacha and what's not halacha, right? That was what he once told me, right? That was his deal. You're right. It's not always clear. Right, it's not always clear, and you can have big machlokot about that point. But fundamentally, what Ray Clapper argued, that if you go through the source, and again, we can prove it maybe later, is that the truth seems to be that Rav Schechter is right, at least for certain types of shailas, that it's undeniable. Right, that there is a point at which there are certain shailas that are so chamor that it's not enough to have access to some information. You need an intuition about the system. Right, you need experience. Right, I think I've mentioned this before, but the 10,000-hour rule by Malcolm Gladwell. Right, in order to have expertise, you just need to have done something for 10,000 hours. Because at some point, you just get a chush, right? Like expert chess players, that at some point they just can, you know, they don't think about it. But they watch so many, right? Last year, if you remember, Mati would just sit in the back endlessly. You do that too? To sit and endlessly watch chess things?
What do you think he does all day?
Me and Mati used to play all day.
He's overseas.
Yes,
we still do.
But okay, so let me just summarize my thoughts. Again, I'm sorry this is less of a sheer style, but that's just the nature because I can't give you sources. But fundamentally, right? What I think you have the following. You have the halachic claim by the Ri or the Moshe Vevro and the Lechem Mishnah that the entire category of Mora Halacha B'Fnei Rabbah doesn't apply Bizman Hazeh because you have Svarim, and fundamentally that has democratized halacha to the point where we're not reliant on poskim in the same way. Even if you don't fully agree with that, as the Marik notes, and we've talked about before, that even if you don't hold of that across the board, it's clear that that somewhat is true, because there are more things that are now mafurish beposkim, that it's no longer psak, you're just parroting sources, and that's, right, that changes it. It changes our dynamic with Rebbeim, it changes the authority that Rebbeim have to poskim based on their own knowledge without looking back at the books, because it's just changed that dynamic. And that is really undeniably... Look, descriptively, undeniably, it has made it that people feel more comfortable asking rabbis less and relying on their own ability to analyze sources. The question is that legitimate? And clearly, right, the Lechem Mishnah Udi may think, yes, of course it's legitimate, right? Meaning it is legitimate. That's exactly their point, that that is the nature of halacha. Rav Schechter argues that it's not true.
Well, the Lechem Mishnah doesn't say anyone can poskim.
Oh, okay, and that's why. Oh, okay, good. So Rav Schechter will say, no, you can't poskim. It's not true. That's not a posik. Someone who can just look something up in Bar Ilan, that's not a posik. Now, again, I think that's a bit extreme, right? If somebody has learned for many, many years but has to look up some chuvah on Bar Ilan because he doesn't have Rav Schechter's memory, I don't think that makes him not a posik, right? Like, you know, I mean, the Rav wasn't like Rav Schechter in that sense, right? Rav Aaron always talks about this, right? Willig talks about this, that the Rav knew a lot.
Right.
He knew enough, right? He knew a lot, meaning he knew Shas, he knew the Rambam, right?
It wasn't.
You know, but he didn't know every Acher, and he didn't know where every Rishon was. Like, maybe he learned it, but he didn't remember where it was. But he knew enough that when he needed it, he could look it up, and then he could paskin. Or he would ask Rav Lichtenstein, and Rav Lichtenstein would tell him where it was, right? That was... You know, how things happened when Rav Lichtenstein was in Shir, right? He would say, Aaron, where's the whatever? And, you know,
exactly.
Rav Lichtenstein would tell him, because Rav Lichtenstein did have that type of memory.
Right.
But anyways, Rav Schechter says you can't, you know, you can't...
Are they not staying in because they can't speak Hebrew?
Okay. So I'll tell you later. But Rav Schechter says, well, you know, this is just an illegitimate model. And the question is that really true? And here I agree with the right Clapper, is that right? Rav Schechter clearly doesn't mean the extreme, which is that this hasn't changed anything. I think it's hard to deny the fact that the role of educated laity is not fundamentally different than like the average shul rabbi. Or the average shul rabbi also doesn't paskin most shailas, but they're capable and educated enough to read the svarim and paskin on many shailas, quote unquote paskin, fine, quote unquote paskin, without getting the question of what's sock and what's not, which we've already dealt with in the past. I think Rav Schachter's right that there are shilas that that's not enough for. And yes, Zev's point is well taken, is that the exact line and figuring out, well, at what point is something no longer the type of thing that I can just look up and look up some analysis online, but I need a communal leader. I need a real posek to weigh in on. That's not always clear. But I think that fundamental framework, which is that, yes, it's legitimate to paskin many shilas yourself, again, quote-unquote paskin, I want to get into it, but recognize that because, yes, we have information, and yes, we have analysis at our fingertips, that doesn't completely remove the role of Rebbe. As the Aruch HaShulchan says, in a certain sense, it gives the power to the person who tells us what to do with this material. But also, you know, and again, I think this is undeniable. And look, this is when I think I've mentioned this to you before. When I once, when people started asking me shailas, and I asked my rebbeim for a substantive heter hara, not like just before I had smicha, like where I got the, you know, technical. Okay, I have heter hara, great, I can paskin, right? But I wanted, like, realistically, can I paskin? Not like, yeah, I passed all the tests. But what do you think, as my rebbe who knows me? Do you think I can paskin? Right. So what? Rishayer told me at the time from Rav Lichtenstein, he said, first of all, Rav Lichtenstein felt that it was a sliding scale, that you have to know yourself. Right? The more you know, the more you've learned, the more shilas you can paskin for yourself in a chanami. There's no reason someone who's learned many years in yeshiva shouldn't be able to paskin basic shilas or even mid-level shilas for himself. Right? That doesn't mean everything. And I think I've mentioned to you before, he said, and how do you know? Right? How do you know at which point you're able to do that? So he said, a good way of doing it is pick the poskim you trust. When you get a shila, figure out the answer you would give, and then check with your Rebbe, right? And if your Rebbeim say, you know what, that analysis makes sense, these are the people you trust for Psak, right? After enough times, you know that you know that the people who you trust think that you think in a proper enough way, and that should indicate to you that that's the type of shalom you can paskin, right? And you figure it out. Right? Again, there's a bit of a sliding scale here. It's a bit of a trial and error. But but you can't deny the fact that, yes, at some level, with an educated lady and access to information, the role of the posting, especially in the non-big shilas, has been minimized. It just has. Right? And it's hard to deny that. And, you know, Elie Fisher's point, which is that from the posting's vantage point, is how do you remain relevant on, right, the big shilas? Okay, in the end of the day, the big shilas will be answered by the people that people trust. But in the average shila, so how do you become, right, who are the ones who stand out? Points out that it's often not the people don't need you just to list makaras for them anymore. They can find themselves. The people who help you organize or give you perspective, either a common sense perspective that resonates or a lumdish perspective that resonates with you or a philosophical perspective that resonates with you, whatever it'll be, the people who are going to remain relevant are the people who shift the way they present things in a way that recognizes the people they're talking to are an educated lady who are going to be discerning. Right, this is not anymore poskim who just say, I like you, I'll ask you shilas. These might be educated balabatim who will say, okay, you know, I'll paskin shilas based on the, you know, sort of secondary literature that I trust, and which one are they going to pick off the shelf depends on, right, who they look at and say, you know what, his methodology of psak and his organization, his presentation resonate with me enough, and I can look at it and be convinced enough of the sugya that I'll be comfortable. And that's just, and you know, that's just the reality to keep in mind. And I think this is just one of those things that it fascinates me. But I also think, like, now, you know, getting more tachlis, right? Can you paskin for yourself? The answer is, I mean, using that term loosely, I think at some point, you know, definitely in the next few years, if you keep learning, you know, I would hope the answer to that question would be yes, right? Like, what else are we doing if we're training you to learn and to think, if not to at some point be able to make your own decisions? I mean, yes, primarily I know you're lamdanim, you don't care about psak, but I'm saying fundamentally, right?
The rub basket for himself.
But I'm saying, and at some point, you know, again, my mesoras and Lichtenstein, what? And again, this is where I think the advice that I got from Rav Schreiber, from Lichtenstein, is good advice, which is the best way to figure out whether you're ready to paskin is to figure out, well, who do you currently trust? Right? Who are your poskim? Who are the people that you trust that their approach to halacha resonates with you? And have an honest conversation and start gauging your own skill set. And at what point do the people that you trust think that your ability to read sources and analyze basic sources and come to a conclusion is sufficient to construct a halachic position?
Would that be enough to paskin?
again, this is a conversation I would have, right? I someone emailed me, you know, to ask me some of my opinions on some of this stuff, and I told them, I said, look, obviously it takes more of shoulders to posken for other people than for yourself, but in different ways, right? Sometimes you're more willing to be makil for what? Well, it could go both ways, right? Sometimes you're more willing to be makil for others, but because you think it's technically mutter, but you'll be machmer for yourself. And sometimes the opposite, which is that you think that something's mutter, but you know it's against the consensus, so you're willing to put your own olam haba on the line, but you don't yet feel like, not that you're not good enough in analyzing, but you don't necessarily feel you have the shoulders to tell someone, yeah, you can go against the consensus because I said so, right? Both of those dynamics, I think, exist, and that's just the reality. I think you got to realize that. And one of those things, again, I know you've heard this from me before, but one of the things is that I'm not sure I have the answers to these questions, that the a lot of these shilas are, in a certain sense, so new and changing so rapidly that the most we can do is identify the questions, identify the ways things have played out, but I can't necessarily give you, right, so I'm giving you makarot that help you frame the question in the new model that we face, but obviously you have to tweak it, right? You have to tweak it, you have to be, but those are, okay, again, maybe I'll give you some of the sources, but again, this is without, until our printer is fixed, or I remember to print before I get here, or print it on Mudim or something. Right, hopefully, this at least gives you chomer l'machshava to think about what some of these principles we've talked about in the last few months already, right? What they play, how they play out in the unique dynamic of, right, 2019, v'chulei. And I do look. I honestly hope, you know, as much as I do think that certain shilas go to poskim. Right, I do believe that. I really do hope that all of you at some point feel comfortable enough posking basic shilas for yourself. Like, I do hope that you get to that point. I care about halacha l'maaseh and not just lamda, so I really do hope that you get to that point. And I don't think that's like a questioning of the Messiah. I think that that's one of that's some of the potential that exists in our generation with the access that we have. Okay, those are my thoughts on this.